You are Locked On the NFL, your daily NFL podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Well, hello. I am Matt Williamson. This is the Locked On NFL Podcast. Happy Wednesday to all. We have Mark Schofield with us, as we do every Wednesday. We are back on our regimen. We're back on our normal schedule here. I do have a little surprise for you guys Friday. I'm going to have Sando on tomorrow. Mark, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well, Matt. We're getting into that sort of crazy franchise tag portion of the NFL schedule. We've got Josh Rosen. Before we came on the air, I literally saw a tweet referencing an article, which I haven't read yet, talking about what Josh Rosen needs to do to salvage his career.
Wow. Like
that's where we're at with Josh Rosen. I mean, I'm reminded so much, and I know we're going to talk about this, so I don't want to spend too much time on it, but I'm reminded so much of the Jared Goff post-rookie season takes where he was a bust, the Rams blew it, they couldn't have drafted this guy first overall. I think we're treading into a similar direction with here, but I'm excited to talk about him, some combine guys, some franchise stuff. It's going to be a good show.
Yeah, you're kind of hitting out of order here, but let's just do it because I'm really intrigued with this Rosen situation. And a couple levels. I mean, I'm not sure I've given my thoughts to the listeners yet, but I've told them for weeks that I think Kyler Murray's going first overall, whether it was Arizona or whomever. It's just how you do this long enough, you can start to read the tea leaves of everyone's going to love this guy. He's going to be the first pick, especially after Baker last year. Fine, I get that. However, you know, they hire a new coach basically to revive Rosen in a McVay-like fashion, they would hope, I would think. Do I blame the cards? Do I blame any of them if they fall in love with Kyler and want to make this move? No. I mean, it's terrible business, obviously. You know, you already paid him the bonus. You're not going to, it's a used car situation where you take it off the lot. You're not going to get what you got in return, you know, what you paid for it in terms of Rosen. But if you absolutely adore a franchise quarterback that can put this team on their shoulders for the next 10, 12 years, I'm fine with that. Again, it's terrible business, and you have to ask yourself, would you rather have Kyler Murray and whatever pick you get for Rosen or Rosen and Bosa? You know what I mean? There's another cost to taking Kyler is you don't get Bosa or Quinnen Williams or somebody like that. So I get that. Again, it's terrible business. I can't say that enough. But if you adore a quarterback, I don't care what the cost or what it does, big picture. What is your thoughts on that? And then we'll talk Rosen, you know, trade value or fits or things like that.
Yeah, it's interesting because everything I've read in and out of Arizona is that when Kingsbury came in to interview, he was the one guy they talked to that had a plan to develop and fix Josh Rosen.
Right.
And, you know, this was the roadmap. We all talk about the McVay model, and it's been copied by whatever team you want to look at, whether it's, you know, Chicago and other teams. The rumor is right now, the story is right now that you got to get the young offensive-minded guy to fix your young rookie quarterback, right? And so that was what everybody expected when they made this hire. But you got to get quarterback right. It's a quarterback-driven league. And if the game plan here is to run what Cliff did in college – sure, Kyler Murray probably fits that better than Josh Rosen because Rosen is your more prototypical pocket passer. While you could still see him sort of create off script a bit, he's not as good as that as Kyler Murray is. And so I understand it from sort of a scheme and execution standpoint, but it's just the sunk cost in terms right. of, like you said, the bonus, number one. And number two, is Murray and then whatever you're going to get in the second round that big of an improvement over, say, a Rosen and then Bosa, and then addressing maybe a weapon or two later on through the draft on day two? It just seems to me like it's a curious decision. And then you've got to understand that you're going to get some bumps along the way with Murray's rookie year, where you've already lived through those with Rosen. But I get it. You know, it's a quarterback-driven league. If this is the offense you want to run, if this is the quarterback you think Betts fits that, then fine. Go get him. Best of luck to you, because I think, and we're going to talk about Rosen now, I think somebody's going to stumble into a pretty darn good quarterback who's already had what might have been his toughest stretch of football, because Warren Sharp just tweeted out this morning how he played out of all the rookie quarterbacks the most top 15 defenses mm-hmm. and the least amount of bottom 15 defenses. So I think we're kind of there's some recency bias, I think, at play with Rosen, because if you see some of his early starts, his first start against Seattle, for example, I thought was great. That when they had, you know, at Lambeau Field, where he drives them down the field, they had a third and 23 in their at their own 4-yard line with 4 minutes to go, and he converted that. And they go down the field and kick the game-winning field goal. It's because of some of the later games in the season after that where he got pulled and struggled a bit, where I think people are a little clouded by the season he actually had. And so I think if you give Rosen's year some context, you might be a little bit surprised at what you see.
Yeah, if this were the stock market, I would have been buying sinking Rosen stock like crazy since like week 4. You know, and now I'd have a whole pile of it and be real happy about it because I think it has nowhere to go but up. I liked him a lot coming out of UCLA. Didn't go to a good situation. 2 coordinators. I mean, people know all these things. But the line was terrible. And then there was 5 backups to end the season, too, at the offensive line. With all respect to Larry, the receivers weren't that great. And David Johnson wasn't used as much. Now, Rosen was not good. I mean, I'm not excusing that. But to say that this guy can't win or isn't a legit top 10 starting quarterback someday, I think is bonkers. If I were Washington, the Giants, Denver, I mean, even the Chargers, I mean, I'm all over this guy.
Yeah. And
the Patriots. How about your Patriots?
Oh, man. I mean, I wrote a piece this week earlier this week over at Pat's Pulpit, basically saying, and this was when the 3rd round rumors were out there.
Which has to be insane, by the way.
That's got to be insane.
Right.
Like, if you're telling me that you can get Josh Rosen a top 10 pick last year for a 3rd rounder, I mean,
every team should say yes.
Every team, all 31 teams out there should say yes, because why not? Especially when you look, his contract right now, it is so inexpensive. It is so team friendly.
You have to play the bonus that's already been paid. I mean, that's beautiful, right?
It's a beautiful situation. Now, I mean, I wrote a piece 2 weeks ago for the Giants. If it were the 6th overall pick and it's either Dwayne Haskins or Josh Rosen, I'm okay taking Josh Rosen. You know, and so I think a team like Washington, I've heard that they might be interested. I think it makes a ton of sense for them, like you said. But if it's simply just a 3rd rounder, which again, mind boggling to me.
Well, let's assume that's insane because we both, you know, I mean, if it's even a 2nd, I think it's insane.
2nd rounder. I still think that's insane, but I think most teams should make that deal if it's a 2nd rounder. Because I'm fine with him if you're Denver and you have to give up 10. If you're the Giants and you got to give up 6. I'm still fine with that because he's a cost-controlled rookie. And if you're the Giants and you hope to squeeze 1 more year out of Eli Manning, but you're not quite sure you're going to get it, in steps in a guy that's started a number of games, that's had the rookie bumps, needed some help around him, and you get to pair him with, oh, I don't know, Odell and Barkley and Ingram and Shepard. I mean, that's a pretty good situation for any quarterback, especially a guy that on some boards, mine included, was QB1 a year ago.
Yeah, I really liked him a lot too. The only team that I would have reservations about that should be in the market and, you know, certainly needs a quarterback would be Miami. Just because if it is tank season, can Rosen be part of the worst team in the league 2 years in a row? You know what I mean?
He's like, going from the frying pan into the fire. I mean, a bad situation gets worse for the poor guy. And,
can you ever recover after that? You know,
at that point, maybe you do start to see him. You know, remember all those stories we heard last year, the red flags about him? He had interests outside of football.
Sure.
Maybe those interests get a little bit more interest into him. We have to suffer a year like that in Miami.
Right. I mean, that's the one situation where I might sell my Rosen stock.
But I mean, yeah, any other team, you know, you mentioned the Chargers. I think that's perfect. You know, he's going to be kind of, you know, close to home a little bit because staying out in the West Coast, he's going to get to learn from Phillip Rivers. Interestingly enough, another guy who had some of those off the field sort of personality type quirks that maybe rub some people the wrong way. That might be the issue with Rosen. Gets to learn from him a bit. Who knows whether Phillip Rivers would be able to or willing to serve in that sort of mentorship type role. But I kind of think, you know, these guys like Breeze and Brady and Rivers, they're not going to be too threatened by a rookie coming in or a second year guy coming in. And so I think that would be a great season. Yeah.
Yeah. I can make a strong case for a dozen teams to give market value, which is way more than a 3rd. Maybe it is less than a 1st or a late 1st for Rosen. And I'd be all over the phones with the Cardinals. We're going to be right back. We got a little more NFL news. And then our 3rd segment's going to be some combine reactions too. So back here in a moment. All right, Mark, I'm not sure I've gotten your opinion on this. I've told my fans often that I think this team is not doing a good job self-scouting themselves, but it sure looks like Nick Foles is going to be the Jags guy. And then I'll take it a step further and assume that that takes them out of the quarterback market for the first round, at least.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I think, you know, a situation with Foles is that, and we talked about this a little bit when, you know, we started doing these shows, it's great to be the backup quarterback, you know?
Sure.
Everybody loves the backup QB. When you come in with a big payday and you got to take over, that's a different situation, you know? And who's to say that when, you know, Foles comes into Jacksonville and they have a couple of bumps along the way, he throws some picks because he's a high variance type player. You might be expected to get, you know, 2017, 2018 playoff run, Super Bowl run, Nick Foles. You might get, you know, 2017, 2018, end of the regular season, Nick Foles that struggled. And if that's what you get, you might get a situation where the guys like, you know, Jalen Ramsey start looking around and say, wait a second. We gave up on Blake Bortles, who was bad, and I get that for this guy. And we passed on, say, a Dwayne Haskins.
This is how we solved the problem.
Yeah. And you've got Dwayne Haskins and Jalen Ramsey out there saying things on Instagram like, oh, I still got to come to Jacksonville. They're, you know, tagging each other in the posts on Instagram. Even there was an Instagram post where they put out the Foles thing and Ramsey was saying, yeah, but we still got to draft a guy. Like, Ramsey is a vocal leader. Ramsey is also a quarterback scout. We've seen that in GQ. And so if Foles comes in and struggles, you might just get a repeat of the locker room situation we saw last year.
Right. And he's so inconsistent. Yeah. And I just think they're looking at their team like, boy, this 2018 thing was an aberration. The 2017 is really who we are. And I told everyone this, that offseason going into last year, they played the easiest schedule in the league in 17. They only won 10 games. The offense wasn't good. They played a really favorable schedule. And yeah, the defense is in place, but be careful what you are. By the way, just a side note, some really dialed in birdies at the combine told me that this team is done with Leonard Fournette.
Yeah. Yeah. I've heard that too. And it does seem like if you're going to make this move away from Leonard Fournette and towards a Nick Foles, like at least with Fournette and the defense they had, the recipe was sort of, okay, well, we could just get even just baseline performance from the quarterback and we can be successful.
Like it's 1985.
Yeah, you know, basically run a modified wing T for all intents and purposes. If that's the recipe, then fine. But if you're going to move away from Fournette and then have to put more on the quarterback, and the quarterback you're putting more on the shoulders of is Nick Foles, that's a question mark, especially when you look at the cost that it's going to take to get a guy like Nick Foles. Now, you know, maybe we're sort of overestimating what it's going to cost to get him, maybe because of, you know, the draft and some of the moves that have already happened. He might get a lesser payday than we're expecting, but still – you know, if you're looking at a situation where you're going to have to make a move anyway to a new quarterback, you're going to move away from Blake Bortles, you want to do some stuff and put some more on the quarterback's shoulders, does it make sense to maybe at least do it on the cheap and get a rookie quarterback? I don't know. It just seems like a risky decision. Like you said, to the point about the strength of schedule, you know, back in 2017, easiest schedule in the league.
Right.
I mean, tied with the Jaguars, and they won just 10 games. They tied with the Titans, who they tied with. Those two teams had the easiest schedules overall. Then they have to play that first-round schedule, and look what happens. And right. So maybe they, you know, get another easy schedule, and they can catch lightning in a bottle again. But I don't know. That's a tough situation.
Yeah, it really is. Yesterday was the deadline for franchise tags. No, I just want to touch on it. Robbie Gould got franchised. Great, who cares? DeMarcus Lawrence got franchised, second year in a row. Not shocking. If I were them, I would try to – I don't know if I'd give them the big money or if I'd keep the carrot out there and have them work on a one-year deal. I have mixed feelings about that. Frank Clark, no surprise. Grady Jarrett, no surprise. Good for those guys, budding stars. Jadeveon Clowney, no surprise. Do any of those faze you?
No, I don't think any of these, yeah, like, faze me. What's interesting is, you know, I sort of feel bad in a sense for D Ford and Jadeveon Clowney, because they get tagged as linebackers.
It's, you know, awful.
These are guys that are basically edge defenders. They get tagged as linebackers because their teams run a base 3-4, so they're technically outside linebackers. Cost them $2 million each.
You know, even if there is a base 3-4 anymore. It's the dumbest rule. Yeah.
It's the dumbest rule. So, I mean, I think those guys can challenge that. We've seen before where people sort of, you know, argue that no, I'm not a tight end, I'm a wide receiver, or things like that. So there might be something to play here. But so it makes sense from a team perspective to go ahead and tag the guys. It's going to save you $2 million if you can get away with it. But I don't think any of these make sense. The big winner is, I think, and we all see the GIFs on Twitter where you've got, you know, Donald Duck diving into a room full of gold coins, or nice, you know, other people like just like doing, you know, snow angels on piles of money, is Trey Flowers. Because you see,
I think Landon Collins as well.
Yeah, Landon Collins too.
Although but Flowers is going to make a fortune.
Flowers is going to make a fortune. You look at these guys that get tagged. They're, except for Robbie Gould, unless I'm missing something, these are all guys that can rush the passer. I don't think Robbie Gould has that club in his bag.
Probably not.
But Trey Flowers, though, you're the premier pass rusher out there, unless you want to make a case for Dante Fowler. And so he's going to get paid big time. Yeah. With Collins, it's a bit of a deeper safety class. And so he'll probably get a good payday, but you've got guys like Earl Thomas and Eric Weddle who just got cut, and some other guys out there. So it's a bit of a deeper safety group. But if you need a pass rusher, Flowers is option one, I think, no matter what. So he's going to get a huge payday. And all the Patriots fans that might be listening to this, you know, you maybe see if you can return those 98 jerseys, because he's not coming back, my friends.
No way. I didn't mention Ford in my first group because you kind of took the words out of my mouth that – there's some rumors now that they haven't yet moved on from Justin Houston, but he's certainly a potential cap casualty. There's rumors that they would look to trade Ford, who, like you said, they just tagged as an outside linebacker, but now they're going to a 4-3 where he'd be.
Right.
So, I mean, I don't know how much truth there is to that. I just think that there is some rumblings on those edge guys in Kansas City. I just wanted to see if you had any thoughts on those.
Yeah, it's a little bit interesting because you've seen the Houston stuff, the Ford stuff. They're going to the 4-3. Maybe they sort of might look in the draft to get some more 4-3 type guys rather than 3-4 outside linebackers. It does seem like an interesting thing to play, and it allows us to sort of forget for a moment that had D Ford stepped back 6 inches before one snap,
right?
We're talking about Mahomes Goff in the Super Bowl. I mean, this was a defense that got better down the stretch. I mean, you remember back week 2, week 3, week 4.
It's like, they caused big plays.
It's like, look, Mahomes can put up 50, and that's great, but is this defense ever going to stop anybody? Because they have to put up 50. But then you look sort of down the stretch. Like you said, that defense got a little bit better. They started to get after, you know, the opposing quarterback. And then into the playoffs, you were like, well, between Houston and Ford, these guys can get after it. And now it's like maybe they have some issues with both of these guys now. And so it's going to be interesting to see that play out. Obviously, the change of defensive coordinator, a lot of Chiefs fans were clamoring for that for a long time because it has seemed like that defense has been an Achilles heel for them.
Yeah, absolutely.
But if you're going to lose two of your best pass rushers in the process, or at least one of them,
that's the only thing you did well.
Yeah.
Right. It's interesting. Although Ford would be a guy that I would be very hesitant to give a long-term deal to because I really only think he's had one good year.
Yeah, he's had the one good year. And with the emergence and growth of Chris Jones on the inside,
right?
You know, you can make the case that, you know,
he's the straw that stirs the drink.
He's the straw, right? Yeah. You know, you get the guy on the inside that draws the doubles and occupies some space and can still move the pocket from the interior. Then you get some more young guys, fringe type guys that Belichick might love, put them on the edge, and then they'll get some one-on-ones that they can win. And so that might be the route they're going, especially if, like you said, they're moving to the more 4-3, four-man front where Jones can occupy some space and free up the guys on the edge.
Yeah, well said. Again, another quick break here, and then we're going to come back with some quarterbacks, wide receivers, and tight ends that Mark brought up that wanted to just discuss here from the Combine, some more news around these guys. It is officially draft season without question. All right, Mark, you gave me a list of 3 quarterbacks, 2 receivers, and 5 tight ends you were in the mood to discuss. Let's start with Jackson.
Yeah, I mean, what's interesting about Tyree Jackson is I wrote prior to this season that, look, imagine, if you will, a quarterback with the athleticism or even better athleticism of Josh Allen, with a better understanding of touch and trajectory, despite having worse passing mechanics. And there you go. There's
worse
Tyree Jackson.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, and that's it. I mean, he's got an absolute hammer for an arm And we saw that in the gauntlet where Steve Smith came over to him and was basically like, man, you got to dial it back here because these guys are having trouble just catching the ball when you're throwing it. He's got velocity. Ran what, like a 4.59 or something like
that? Yeah, right in that neighborhood, right. And he's gigantic.
You know, at 6'7". I mean, that's ridiculous. I mean, yeah, 4.59, a 34.5-inch vertical, you know, 120 inches on the broad. I mean, these are tight end type numbers, tight end type size. And so if you're looking for that raw, toolsy type guy, he might be it. Now, the issue is at 6'7", you see with a lot of taller quarterbacks, they lock up that front leg when they throw. It's just a biomechanical thing. They have a wide base. It gets wider when they step. They lock up that front leg, and it causes velocity and placement issues. And so can he be the tall quarterback that overcomes that? Because, you know, you look through the annals of NFL history, there aren't a lot of quarterbacks in that 6'7 range that have a ton of success.
No.
And so that would be interesting to watch. But he probably put himself into at least the late day two.
Oh, I think he's in that conversation. I bet he goes to third round. Yeah.
And I think so, too. So, yeah, I mean, he had a huge, you know, he had a pretty good Senior Bowl week. Now he's got this great combine. I'm sure he's going to, you know, have a fantastic pro day in the scripted session as well. Yeah, he's had a nice little pre-draft process.
You can have him, though. I'm not using a third round pick on this guy.
I mean, I'm more comfortable sort of a fourth round range, but I mean, you quibble in third and fourth round, but still, I mean, if it's an early third, you know, the hit rate on third round quarterbacks doesn't tend to be that great. But the thing is, with that athleticism, I mean, could this be Logan Thomas 2.0, you wonder?
Yeah, but how great's that?
That's true.
I mean, he can hardly even make a team. You know, like, I hate that argument of, okay, we're going to use a third round pick on. If it doesn't work out, we'll turn him into a tight end. Well, how good a tight end? He's not going to be Jimmy Graham. I mean, he's never done it before. It's not the breeding ground to learn new things.
Right. And, you know, he doesn't have the basketball background of Jimmy Graham.
No, so right.
It's not going to pan out. No, I mean, I think that's a good point. It's just, you know, when you get into sort of the realm of the toolsy quarterback, like this was a point brought up to me by Bryce Rossler, does some work from Lions Wired, a couple of other different sites. He works for over at Sports Info Solutions. And he said, basically, what's really the difference between a Drew Lock and a Tyree Jackson? You know,
no, I see what you're saying. I mean, if you look at it through that lens,
big arm type guys that have some tools, need to fix some mechanics. One's going to go top 10. And we're wondering if the other guy's sort of a third rounder. It's, you know, it is interesting to see how some of these sort of narratives develop. But I do think Jackson had a very good pre-draft process so far.
It's funny. I just wrote an article for a Steelers site I'm working for, and the Steelers picked 20. And I pretty much laid out, hey, Steeler fans, these 17 guys or so aren't going to be there. So you can narrow down who you want. And Locke, I did not put on that list, but I mentioned him. Do you think he's definitely a first rounder or a top 20 guy?
I won't have a top 20 grade on him.
Right. You know, I'd way rather have Rosen if I'm Washington or right.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, if you're asking me Rosen or Locke, Rosen. Heartbeat.
Right. Like, yeah.
I think he'll probably get into the top 20 because that's the difference. And you know this as a former scout. The difference between evaluation and valuation, right?
Yeah.
You know, you could evaluate.
I think he will go.
You evaluate a guy and you say, look, he's a late first, early second type guy. You know, he's a fringe top 40 player. But because he's a quarterback, that becomes top 10 because of the value on the position. Like we were talking about with Kyler Murray, you got to fix the position. And so if you've identified him and he's your top quarterback and you need a guy, you get him. And so he's probably going to get into that top 10. But I don't think he'll be graded there by most teams.
Yeah. Haskins obviously will be. What are your thoughts on him post-combine?
I mean, I think the throwing session was important for him, and I think he did a pretty good job. He showed you that, you know, the accuracy is there. The lower body mechanics with him have been an issue. Those seem to be crisper. You know, he's the guy that fits the sort of prototypical pocket-type passer. If you were worried about his 40, then you're doing this all wrong. He's not going to – I mean, did he break 5? I don't think he did. I mean, he's
– I don't care battleship one bit, right. Back there. Yeah, right.
He could have run a 7. It doesn't matter to me. That's not him, you know?
Can he tuck it and get a first down when there's no spy on him?
Can he just keep the ball and when he gets sacked?
Right,
like,
I mean,
literally, the bar is pretty low for him when it comes to his athleticism. And so I think he's the prototypical pocket-type passer. I think he makes sense for the Giants and some other teams. Mm-hmm. I think he had a pretty good combine. And apparently, you know, this is Lions season. We get that. But apparently his board sessions and meetings were fantastic. And that makes sense because – the main takeaway from the combine is this. What you see at the combine, whether it's testing or drills, whatever, go back to the tape on and sort of either revisit some stuff, things like that. And if you've studied Haskins, you know that he seems to be a pretty smart quarterback from the pre-snap phase through the post-snap phase. And so the idea that he had good board work and meetings with teams makes some sense because you see that, you know, mental process and stuff show up on film.
Yeah, I'm not predicting it yet or anything, but the second we know Kyler Murray's going one to Arizona, Haskins very well could be two. I mean, two or three teams can't just sit there and hope he falls to the Giants. I mean, you might have to be aggressive and slightly overspend, and therefore Bosa and these other guys fall. But that's just how this whole process works.
Yeah, I mean, if, you know, if Murray goes one, obviously, you know, you've got some scenarios at play here. But, I mean, I think, and you probably agree with this, the team to sort of watch if Murray goes one. You know, San Francisco is going to have a great player fall in their lap. I doubt they trade out. But the Jets at three,
right?
You know, they need to get some extra draft capital. They don't have a ton of picks. And they might want to get ahead of Oakland at four. Because we're hearing how, you know, John Gruden, with his pool noodles, you know, he might be doing something funny come pro days and stuff. And so he might want to get a quarterback. You want to get ahead of the Giants at six. So, yeah, I think, you know, three might be where Haskins comes off the board. And it's interesting to think that in this year where everybody's saying these aren't great quarterbacks, last year's class was so much better. Next year's class is going to be great. We might see two in the top five.
Right, right. I bet we do. You know what I mean? Yeah. This is the way the world works. Easton Stick from North Dakota State. Go.
I mean, what's fascinating about Stick is he's a quarterback where I've had two separate put the pen down moments studying him. One was against, I think, North Alabama, watching him, where I put the pen down and I'm like, why am I even doing this? Like, what is the absolute point? Like, I just don't get
better things to do with my time than this.
Yeah, I mean, I could go take a shower. I could go feed the cat. I could do anything else and then waste another 10 minutes watching this guy. And then you watch him in other games and you're like,
dude, you know how many high school players I did that with in 3 years of Pitt?
I mean, you're just like, what am I doing here? But then you put on some other games, you're like, whoa, okay, this could actually kind of work. You see him running four verts out of 2x2 or 3x1 of these looking safeties off. You see him with that change of direction ability as a runner, which showed up at the combine, which we can get to. Then he has a really bad Shrine game week. You know, seemed like he just didn't have it. You wonder if, look, had played a long schedule with the FCS playoffs and stuff. Maybe there was some fatigue there. Had a fantastic combine. I mean, he tested like a slot receiver. I mean, his three cone was like literally slot receiver type numbers. His three cone was, I think, where is it? Yeah, his three cone of 6.65.
Wow. I overlooked that. I didn't see that. That's amazing.
That's quick.
That's quick, right.
It's a 4.62, you know, comes in with a 33.5-inch vertical. I mean, I know we just said position switches don't matter, but is this Julian Edelman 2.0 perhaps?
And I mean, you're using a seventh-round pick. You're not using a third-round pick like Jackson, right?
I'm thinking about him anywhere before the sixth or anything like that.
Your boy Stick's going to be a Patriot, isn't he?
I mean, that's what I was telling him. I mean,
done deal. Damn.
Coming in and take Julian Edelman, kind of taking him under his wing. And like 6 years, you know, 3 or 4 years from now, he's out there covering DK Metcalf in an AFC championship game. We're like, oh, my God, it's Edelman 2.0, isn't it? I mean,
he'll make
such
a big play in
cliche,
on special teams in week
pop,
one.
Yeah,
exactly.
I mean, those kinds of numbers. I mean, he's an interesting type quarterback. Like I said, I've had some ups and downs with him, but you have tested metrics like that, and I'm sure that a lot of teams are thinking,
right. He's smart, right. Yeah, he's a Patriot. Yeah. We're not going to get to the tight ends. I apologize. Maybe we will next week. But as usual, we get long and we could talk on and on. DK Metcalf. You have to talk about the guy. I mean, everyone's seen the Instagram pictures and all that. That's wonderful. Goes insane at the combine with all the drills. Well, except for the change of direction ones.
Oh.
And I've brought him up a little bit earlier in the week. But I just want to throw this out there, and I'm not saying I wouldn't take him if I'm the Bills or whatever. He's got amazing trump cards, but my concerns are, you know, and it wasn't like, boy, your three cone and shuttle were bad for a wide receiver. They were like a guard. I mean, they were awful, and that worries me, but you better use them properly. I mean, Mike Evans wasn't great in that regard either. I mean, I get that, but, and I hate talking about injuries. This guy's coming off a neck. I mean, it's not a broken forearm or even an ACL. Necks and backs, I don't like at all. And this isn't just a fat guy talking either, but he has, like, no body fat. That just screams pulled muscles, cramps. You know, like, and I don't think you're going to convince this guy, hey, get a little chubbier for us, because I think he's pretty damn proud of his body. You know what I mean? Like, I could just see this guy questionable 5 weeks a year.
Yeah, I mean, that's an issue. And, you know, look, definitely explosive straight line speed. 4.33 is incredible at his size. You know, the 40.5 vertical, that's really darn explosive. football, though, is a game that's won. It's a game of inches, right? And I know it's a cliched thing from any given Sunday, but if you think about winning one-on-one matchups, they're usually won in the first couple of steps, right? Yep. Explosiveness is part, but that quick, sudden change of direction ability is also a part. Things like the three-cone test that, the short shuttle test that. His three-cone and short shuttle, they were worse than Tom Brady at the combine.
Right, right.
I mean,
awful.
Like, awful. Just flat out bad. And, you know, Tom Brady is by no means an athlete, but he at least put up better numbers there. And so it is an area of concern. And yeah, like you said, I think that's a great point, Matt. You know, you sit him down and say, look, man, you gotta sort of change the body type a bit. He's going to say, come on.
Right. Look, how hard I worked to
get
here.
I'm going to be honest.
Right.
Look at this. And I don't know if that happens. Are there things he could do in the vertical game? Sure. You know, but that might make him sort of a one trick pony. And when you're talking about drafting a guy as the first receiver, drafted perhaps early in the first round, are you going to take the one-trick pony or the guy that can do a little bit more, that can give you more of the route tree? Because here's the other thing. You look at that Mississippi offense, he ran like three different routes. Now, sure. They always say, and you know this, Matt, scout the traits, not the scheme. Well, one of the traits you look for if you're going to run an expanded route tree is the ability to quickly change direction. We haven't seen that. And people are now breaking down his three cone and saying, oh, he slipped here. Okay. Well, fair when enough, you have that right. kind of body size, you might have trouble changing direction.
Yeah, right. Maybe he'll always slip coming out of his race. Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's just – you know, it makes me a little bit wary of him. The explosiveness and the vertical speed, the launch speed, yeah, that's great. How many times are you running the nine route? How many times are teams throwing the ball 30 yards, 40 yards downfield per game? A couple of times? Are you drafting a guy for a couple of times a game?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and no. I do think he'll go high and coaches will, you know, we'll get it out of him. And if used properly, maybe very, very impressive, very good, and certainly will have impressive moments no matter what. I just have some reservations.
Yeah.
Tell people about Stanley Morgan, then we'll wrap this thing up.
Yeah, Morgan's interesting, and I watched, full disclosure, I am, believe it or not, a guy from Boston, Patriots fan. I'm a Nebraska fan. I mean,
oh, I didn't know that. That's crazy.
Weird thing. It's a weird thing. But look, you know, playing the D3, you know, as a kid, you know, in college, obviously I don't have a D3 school that I call home. I'm married into it. My wife's family's from Nebraska. So, you know, one of the things you do when you start dating somebody is you find a way to talk to the dad, right? And the dad went
good
to Nebraska.
Way.
So, hey, I'm suddenly wearing an Eric Crouch jersey.
Go
right?
Huskers.
So you become a Nebraska fan. And so I've seen, you know, watched a ton of this kid. He was basically the focus of their passing game, and defenses knew it. They would shade coverage to him. But in contrast to the conversation we were just having, you get on the ball in space, he's one step and go. Change of direction brings you that yak ability. You see some of the testing metrics on him, as opposed to Metcalf and the 7.38 in the three cone, 6.78. You know, you see the short shuttle, 4.5, or Metcalf, 4.13. Pretty good metrics. Yeah, he runs a 4.53. But again, if you're worried about that short area quickness, you know, this is the type of guy that fits that bill. And so I think with some of the way the offenses are trending in the league where it's quick game, get the ball out, get the ball to guys in space, you know, short yardage throws, pivot routes, option routes, things like that, Morgan's an interesting guy to watch. So he had a pretty good combine, up and down career, but he was a good receiver on what was a bad team getting better last year. And so if you're in that sort of D3 range and you're looking for that slot type guy, keep Stanley Morgan Jr. in mind.
Maybe third rounder?
Maybe. I mean, he might be one of
another
those guys
Patriot.
That, yeah, I mean, you know, that's easy to say, you know, but he's a guy that fits that sort of build. When you're running those option and conversion routes and those types of quick game stuff, you know, if you need a guy like that, I mean, interesting team to watch might be, say, a Dallas, you know, with Cole Beasley and some rumblings there. So, yeah, keep an eye on Stanley Morgan.
I bet New Orleans likes him. Yeah. I mean, you know, I mean, just a lot of guys. I mean, there's a big market for that style of player that you just described now.
Yeah, and, you know, that's the way the game is trending. And, you know, what's better to help a let's frame it this way. What helps a quarterback more, a guy that's open 40 yards downfield or a guy that's open 5 yards downfield?
And often.
Yeah.
Right. Great point. Mark, this was a blast. Folks, things are happening quick. Like I said, Sando's going to be here tomorrow. All my Steeler people are on the edge of their seat. Sounds like AB could be dealt any minute now. Supposedly there's a deadline. I'm not sure about that on Friday. So at some point we are going to dissect that if it goes down. I told you I have a special present for you on Friday and Sando tomorrow. Mark, you're the man. This was fun. Let's do it next week too.
Sounds great, my friend. Always a blast to be with you, buddy.
Absolutely. Thanks, man.